Hello, everyone, and welcome to Dog-Eared Corner. I'm Chris Davies, and today I am honored to be joined by Molly Lawless, the author of Hit by Pitch, Ray Chapman, Carl Mays, and The Fatal Fastball. Molly, thank you for joining me.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I have an admission to make right here off the start. This was my first graphic novel. I don't have any objections to the format or anything. It hadn't been something I'd picked up, so this was a really fun read for me, and I really liked the style and the way the narrative was helped along by your illustrations here. What about this style in particular, graphic novels and cartoons and things like that, were you drawn to as an author?
Well, you know, for me, well, first of all, I don't think that my book has ever been anyone's first graphic novel, so that is pretty amazing to me. I am honored to introduce you to the art form, and hopefully you'll go on from here. But for me, drawing came before writing. I kind of grew up as a kid who was always drawing and wanted to be an artist. And as I got older and realized that just being an artist is not such an easy occupation to just fall into, I was sort of, you know, doing some, you know, freelance illustration, sort of illustrating my own stories. And, you know, since I had this long running interest in dead ball baseball, particularly, I started doing little cartoons about it. And that's kind of what led to this. So I had the drawing came first. So I just kind of illustrate everything. That's just my natural state.
Cool. Where do you draw inspiration from as an artist? What kind of, artists or cartoonists were you particularly taken with when you were getting started?
Oh gosh, let's see. So many illustrators. There's a lot of children's book illustrators. Mainly my number one influence is probably Peanuts, Charles Schulz. Just, mm-hmm. I mean, my style isn't anything like his, but he's sort of like the gold standard for just kind of, you know, all of it, the humor and the depth of it. But for me, I like Edward Gorey, like, you know, that kind of thing. Just kind of from everywhere. But those are probably my two big like artistic inspiration.
Cool. When you were you wrote a little in the introduction about this, but what really made you want to write about this incident in baseball history in particular?
Well, as I mentioned as you said in the introduction, when I was a kid, I was such a huge baseball fan that when the regular season would end or the playoffs would end, the World Series would end, I was just kind of bereft. Just like, what do I do now? So luckily my father had probably like four or five baseball history books. They were, you know, I would just go over them over and over again. And the biggest one was this baseball encyclopedia that was probably from like 1981. It was not very up to date, but it went all the way back to 1876. So I, you know, just totally normal thing for a 10-year-old to do. I just like dove in, you know, like, let's just look at every single, just my thirst for baseball was just like unquenchable. So, so I started looking at all the reasons a player would stop playing and when their careers ended. And they were, a lot of players died during, especially back then, not a lot of players, but, you know, every so often a player would die during the season for one reason or another, or they would, you know, whatever other, I can't think of any other examples for someone to just abruptly stop a trade, you know, more, less macabre stuff. I sort of, you know, I was like, gosh, I can't imagine one of like my heroes dying now, what would I ever do? So I was just so fascinated with the idea that that could happen. And then I just kind of was looking for all the, you know, what happened to everybody. And when I came upon that, like the idea of a player dying from something that happened in a game, it was just, you know, kind of mind blowing, like, you know, that happened and how come I don't know about it? And it just seemed to me like such a big deal that I couldn't imagine that it wasn't, you know, just like the number one story. But of course it was 1920, and at the time I was reading it, it was, you know, 1986. So so I mean, it was just the drama of that period. And then later on, when I start, you know, years and years later, when I just kind of came upon The Pitch That Killed and kind of more in-depth stories about it, the drama of the whole story just was so interesting to me. It just seemed like these two guys from Central Casting and a World Series win, and mm-hmm. just, I mean, all the cast of characters, as far as just baseball greats were concerned, you know, there was just peppered with all these great stories within the story that, it just seemed like something I wanted to kind of bring that story to more people.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned digging through those books, and I've never considered myself to be like normal, but that was definitely my experience growing up too. So digging through those old baseball books was, I was the only one checking them out in my grade school library, I think.
I took Babe Ruth's quote unquote autobiography out of my school library, my mm-hmm. Catholic school library, probably like 5 times. And I was like, the librarian's like, how about something else? I'm like, well, I could always give this another read.
Yeah. So this story, I mean, even when you were learning about it, was an old story. And I was just wondering, you mentioned bringing elements of comedy, tragedy, and mystery into this, and I think you really achieved that. How difficult was it for you to do that research to find those stories, as well as the anecdotes, maybe about Carl Mays and throwing a World Series game? When you were doing research, was it difficult? Did you get into that rabbit hole that you used to know as a kid? How did that go?
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened. I came upon the Glory of Our Times, and I believe there was reference to, I need to reread that book again, but there's reference to the story, different points of view of the story in there. There's Fred Lieb's book, Baseball as I've Known It. A lot of these books that kind of touch that story, that had like a corner of it here or there. Because, you know, players that were playing then, a lot of them were on the field, or they had a reaction to it, or they knew somebody who was on the field, or they played for the team and then got traded. So there was a lot of this kind of glancing connection to the story in a lot of these books that I already had and that I was already reading. That's another thing. I kept coming upon, like, mentions of it, because, of course, if you're reading about dead ball baseball, this was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, then as far as actually once I decided I was telling this story, like doing the research, I based a lot of the, you know, the main crux of the story, the main narrative on The Pitch That Killed, because that really just tells that story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were things, you know, players in there. I kind of would research the players mentioned in there. You know, I read a Tris Speaker biography and a Carl Mays a book about Carl Mays that was out of print that I was happy that somebody was able to lend to me. So there were things that I had to really dig for. Like I went to the, I was luckily in living in DC at the time I wrote this. So I was able to go to the Library of Congress and pull up all the old, you know, the microfiche newspapers of the, you know, Plain Dealer in 1920, you know, couple of days after the incident happened. So I was able to, you know, kind of really get the firsthand sort of right out of the newspaper there. But so there was a lot of, it wasn't too hard to find a lot of these points of view about it, but they were kind of in these funny places. I also used the bibliography of, as I was reading a book, I would kind of follow the bibliography. So Mike Sowell's book, you know, there were places that he had drawn from, or journalists he mentioned that I was able to get books by or about. So it was a lot of like little feelers out to different mm-hmm. different places.
That some of the stories in here are, it is, you do hit like this, there's fun stories, and it's this book about a pitch that killed someone. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I know it's been a while since you did this research and this writing, but was there like one of the stories that you worked on in here, one of the chapters that was your favorite, like Chapman singing as an Irish crooner or something like that?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Let me, those are the really, I mean, that's the thing. It's a really you know, obviously a sad story, but I just had so much fun going down these rabbit holes because baseball just has all these great stories. There was one about, I don't know why this one's coming to mind, the Irish tenor story I did love, but the I love the story of Slim Caldwell. I mean, he got struck by lightning and then won the game. And then Tris Speaker allegedly, I wish I could remember which book this was from that I got this story, but Tris Speaker allegedly like cured him of his alcoholism.
Right.
In his contract. Like, I mean, it just, there's just so many of these little nuggets that I, you know, tried to add some levity to the story because, you know, for me, I don't know, like one thing that got me really back into these stories was the kind of, oh, this humor, like these just wild tales of these guys just playing a game they still play, but in a totally different planet almost. Mm-hmm.
So with these characters who are, you know, so far in the past and you're illustrating them, was it hard to create depictions of them, graphic depictions of them, as opposed to either someone more contemporary who there are a lot more pictures of, or a character of your own creation who you can do whatever you want with?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question because that was a big challenge for me. I you know, especially mainly with Ray Chapman, there were probably like four pictures of him available to the public. And so I really had to just decide I was going to draw him a certain way. It's like, you know, I'm not going to find a picture of him doing X, Y, or Z. I'm not going to find this 3/4 profile. Like, it's just, I just have to like, and I kind of, I did that with most of the players. Like, I knew what they looked like. I used a lot of photo reference, but then I had to just make my version of them. But for him, it was really like, there was a period of time where I was just like, all I was doing was looking for pictures of Ray Chapman. And it was just, and then recently I just came upon one I hadn't seen before and I was just enraged. I was like, where was this? It was like, but anyway, so yeah, so there was a lot of, you know, a lot of, especially the more famous players, there were a lot of pictures of that I was able to like get more of a, create more of a sense that I felt like was more correct. But I will say that Tris Speaker was probably like the most difficult face to draw that I've ever drawn in my life. I was having kind of looking over the book. I was just like, God, I remember like just agonizing over his, I don't know what it was about his face. It was just a hard one for me to recreate, but hopefully I did it justice.
I think it's a pretty good representation. Yeah, I'm looking at it.
Okay, great.
It looks like what I imagine when I have seen his pictures. Obviously baseball, a big part of your life. You've continued to illustrate things. Have you worked on more baseball projects since this book?
You know, I regrettably have not. I've done a bunch of, before this and after it as well, like kind of, I had a series called Great Moments in Baseball and it was, I kind of tried to keep it to like a one page story, one-page treatment with a humorous bent about great moments in baseball, but there were really kind of ignominious moments in baseball. Like there's a story about Wilbert Robinson and a grapefruit being dropped from a plane. Like there's, you know, Merkel's boner and Snodgrass's muff. Like just trying to find the funny parts of these old stories. But I would love to get back to those, and I would love to get back to a baseball book at some point. But what happened was I wrote this book and illustrated it. Probably took me altogether. I wasn't working on it constantly. I had other things I was doing, but a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And then I had a baby, and I wrote the introduction to this like when he was like 3 days old. Mm-hmm. So reading back to it, I barely remembered being conscious to write it, but then they, you know, I have two kids and they just, you know, they just take over and it's this thing I really want to get back to, but they're a lot. And, you know, I keep thinking, oh, they're going to start school and school has been a little sporadic lately, but anyway, to say, sadly, no, but I would love to. And reading this back again, really kind of lit that fire in me again. So I'm, they're just, the stories are endless. So I think I will at some point get back to it.
I can certainly appreciate with how kids can have that effect. Are there any baseball stories in particular that you have thought about, or has that, have you not even gotten that far in your thinking?
There have been so many that I'll just hear or I'll remember and I'll say, oh, I should go back to that. And I do have a kind of long fascination with Johnny Evers and Tinker Evers and Chance. I think Johnny Evers would seem like kind of a interesting character, shall we say.
Sure.
And I also, I mean, I don't think there's really much more to do than what I know. I shouldn't say that. I'm sure his depths are endless, but Wally Pipp is another character that I'm kind of fascinated with. He's a person. He's not a character.
Yeah.
But, you know, his he's just this, he's like the embodiment of the kind of story I love from baseball, which is like this asterisk person, you know, like, you know him as the guy who had a headache and, you know, Lou Gehrig took over and then never stopped. And that's a story. I did a short version of that story, one of my great moments in baseball. But he's another person that I just like to, I don't know, in certain stories where I can. But there are tons. I mean,
sure, he was part of Hit by Pitch. I mean, I'm looking at it and 5 years away from losing his job. It's something that stands out. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
Is it mostly the dead ball era that is still your wheelhouse?
Yeah, it is. That's kind of where my kind of first love. So I kind of always want to go back to it. I mean, there's of course great stories later, and I've read some, I'm trying to remember the name of it. Some great late, you know, Vec is in Rec and those, like that era I've done some reading on. But yeah, that's sort of like something about that era, the like kind of pre Babe Ruth and during Babe Ruth's career. So that wouldn't be dead ball, but, you know, a little later. Yeah, I mean, that's where my kind of love lies. But
sure,
there are lots of good stories for all eras.
Of course. One thing you did touch on towards the end here is the Hall of Fame case. And it's Hall of Fame season. You know, I wonder your opinion. Do you think Carl Mays or Ray Chapman really had it cut out for the Hall of Fame, or they got hard done by the voters?
You know, I think I may have said this exact thing in the book, but for Carl Mays, like if he were in the Hall of Fame, like if you just looked at his stats, if he was in the Hall of Fame, it wouldn't be, you'd kind of say like, oh yeah, sure, that guy belongs in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. But he's never going to be voted into the Hall of Fame. Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, in order to be in the Hall of Fame, you have to be voted in, and he's never going to be voted in. I know it's sort of circular logic, but like his stats are such that it would be a possibility, but he just was so disliked and, you know, accidentally killed a man, and just, you know, there was that possibility of the 1921 World Series and you know, the throwing it, whether that was true or not. There were just enough questions around him and his character that it just wasn't going to happen. And I don't know, like I do have, you know, because although he is the quote unquote villain of the story, I do have a lot of sympathy for him. And he just seemed like a very just awkward and kind of, I don't know, he had a heart, kind of a hard time, and just was, you know, not the most social situations were not easy for him, shall we say. And Ray Chapman, I think, you know, if he had kept on the way he was going, he's the kind of person that I think his stats could have been light, and he could have been kind of brought in on his personality maybe. But you know, he wasn't, like, he was a solid player and a great fielder and fast, but he wasn't, you know, he wasn't like blowing everyone away with his offense. But so I don't know, if he had lived longer, maybe. But as it stands, you know, I think he's just going to be that sort of that footnote, hopefully the only one of its kind. But yeah.
Well, that is all the questions that I had for you. Is there anything else that you'd like to share, want the listeners to know about Hit by Pitch?
Gosh, I Well, it's been great talking to you. I don't know. I mean, I hope people read it and pass it on. I'm really, really honored that you all decided to read it, and I honestly hope you enjoy it. And yeah, if you read it, tell someone about it. And I really hope also, you know, if any of your listeners and readers pick it up, do look in the bibliography at the end. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
It's been so long since I read a book. And check out some of those books, because those put mine to shame. Like, these are just like great, great books. So if you find yourself in a hit by pitch rabbit hole, just keep digging.
Great. Well, thank you very much for the book. It was wonderful. And thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
The book is Hit by Pitch, Ray Chapman, Carl Mays, and the Fatal Fastball. It was written by Molly Lawless, who was our guest today. Thank you all for listening.